You can find LUL Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at LUL Podcast. You can also subscribe to our LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Welcome to today's episode of Level Up Language Podcast. Today we'll be talking about writing, the writing modality, as the third part of our modality series that we're doing. And we've covered reading and listening so far. Today we will cover writing, what that entails, type of activities that we do, why we assess writing, what that should look like, how students perform. We'll talk about various aspects of writing. Specifically, we'll mention parts of our IPA, but mostly we'll focus on classroom type activities and the day in, day outs of writing. And with that, let's get into Level Up. I'm your host, Davin Lemke, on this episode, along with my co-hosts, Brandon Welker and Miles Nance. Roger Bird is not joining us. He's out buying season tickets to the Denver Broncos. Huge Bronco fan, Roger is.
I haven't met a bigger one.
I haven't either. Yeah he's
and
huge.
That's not a joke on his size.
I mean. Yeah, no, he just loves the Broncos.
He just loves the Broncos. Yeah. So the three of us will be talking today about writing. And I think in our district, the last number of years, I can't remember exactly how many years, we've done a mid-year and an end-of-year writing assessment. That was a primary modality we were measuring in as we've been working more towards more concrete, authentic type assessments. I think generally across the district, writing is normally our highest rated or highest proficiency modality. Is that right? For you two, at least.
Yeah. Reading.
Like generally students.
It's up there. Reading sometimes
writing,
higher.
Kind of balance out.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's mostly universal across the district, that our writing and our readings are generally higher and our speakings and listenings are very low. And definitely our listenings are by far the lowest. So we want to talk about that. How can we hopefully balance those numbers a little bit? Why is writing perhaps, I don't want to use the word easier. I don't like that word, but how is writing getting more out of them than we can get out of speaking or listening? And we'll talk about various aspects, like that. But first we'll start off very general. Let's talk about what types of writing we can have our students do in the class. Just very basic writing activities. To give you an example, in my class, I have the starter. That's a very brief writing where they come in. There's five words on the board that we just learned. Usually some type of a structure, or you might call them a verb, like I have to and I want. And then usually I'll have two cohesive devices. So they have to build those into sentences. The sentences don't necessarily have to connect, but I'm just trying to get them to create their own sentence with a certain bank of vocabulary. So that's a three sentence. It's a very brief writing thing. I think generally in the district, a lot of us will do a very general writing prompt, and we'll talk about this a little later in the podcast too, but we might just throw up there, like, tell me about your likes and dislikes, tell me what you do with your family. Mm. You give them 10 minutes, right? 10, 15 minutes just to see what they can do with newly read stuff. What other type of writing activities do we do?
I just think about the IPA. First of all, if we kind of think about what we have to, or what we're going to ask them to do now in IPAs, which is generally a pretty holistic writing. Like, they're going to have to, I mean, we always give them a big situation, right? And then we ask them to respond with as many details as they can and a full thing. I can't remember what we call it exactly, just a writing response, but usually to a whole situation. So that's pretty holistic, and it's good to practice those, I would say, as a whole frequently, but it's also good to kind of pinpoint a few skills and have them do that. So like you're talking about writing the sentences and using some cohesive devices. And what I've tried lately that's been actually, I think, pretty effective so far. I haven't had a test to see yet how they do, but I just feel like in general their writing may be a little bit better. But we'll focus on one thing. I was talking to Miles about this the other day, but just give them like one object or one picture or something like that, and they speed write as much as they can for, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or something like that. And you kind of stop and have them reflect with a partner, like what was hard to say, and then you can kind of restart. So anyway, just to answer your question, I think that if we're always thinking about the IPA, which is where we want our kids to do well, and on the AP tests, if that applies to us, then it's usually a pretty big, long, free response to a situation. And we can kind of target skills and get them to use more cohesive devices if we point that out and have them do that. So I think a lot of pinpointing there and a lot of chances to kind of free write under a little bit of pressure because a test has, you know, a time limit. I think those things help a lot.
Yeah. And I think I've noticed over the last few weeks that I've changed the dynamic of my writing because I used to do those type of prompts where, okay, we've learned these things, now tell me about this in your own life kind of a prompt. And I've realized they're too general. They don't elicit enough creative writing, and they don't really involve a lot of risk, which risk is really where the students can demonstrate proficiency. And so over the last couple of weeks, as I've altered my writing activities. So one, for example, I did the other week, so we talked about daily routines. What do the kids do on a daily basis? I had them write, I used one of my typical general prompts. And I said, you know, in eight to 10 sentences, tell me about your typical day and then tell me about your typical weekend. So typical weekday, typical weekend. And so they describe it. They use some cohesive devices. I told them, give me as much detail in one sentence as possible, kind of a thing. But then the portion I cared the most about is when I had them switch papers with somebody else. And then I said, now respond to that person's daily routine. Is yours the same? Is it different? How? Why? What do you think about their daily routine? Stuff like that. It created a very specific circle in which they had to use, within which they had to use the language. But at the same time, they scored so much higher. They gave me so much better language because they had a concrete goal that they had to do rather than just, hey, write about this. You know, it's just not specific enough. It doesn't help them understand how to go from floor to ceiling with their language. And I think with your activity too, Brendan, where you give them something specific to write about, like an object, a picture, or whatever it is, it forces them to use a language in a very specific scenario, which for some reason I found, and I say some reason because I'm not quite sure the reasons, but they perform a lot better on those than if you just give them this open space to write in.
Yeah, because then they start to like tend towards, I'm this old and I like this, and that stuff's good. But it gets old fast. Like, yes. Give me some juice about some specific details about this thing rather than just kind of these like first term descriptor words from level one.
Right.
You know,
yeah, so. they stay in the novice too often. And,
yeah.
And when you give them something very specific, some type of goal, like you need to work towards this, they do a lot better at actually using the language. And I found that writing their own questions helps a lot too, as I've worked on that. Not just writing a response to, hey, tell me about this, but have them create their own questions and then write about that also brings their language to another level. Miles, what do you think?
I think a lot of stuff. Sometimes I don't think that I'm thinking, but then I realize I'm thinking about thinking and what? Now, I just want to, I don't know where to jump in, really. Brandon, you were talking about having them write about a picture or something. One thing I like to do in that particular instance with some of the, even with level ones is, I've been using, and not as often as I want to, but using a swear word of the day, which is basically a vocabulary word or a word that they've been using a lot of that I don't want them to use anymore. So, and I did one recently like that, where you're having them write about a picture, describe a picture, and they're trying to describe family. So I had a picture of a family and they were hiking, and the word I told them they couldn't use was hiking. And they didn't like it. They were mad at me for doing that, but you know, what are you gonna do, right? But it was fun to see though different ways that they were able to say they were outside with their family, enjoying nature, whatever it may be. Just to give them that option to try to talk around it, that circumlocution. And then even up into the higher levels, I find, and maybe it's just because they still aren't good at writing in English. They haven't quite figured that out, because generally the students that I know do well in English and can write well, they usually write a lot better and they can form these different structures and sentences.
It's a skill that transfers.
Yeah, they just need that help in organization. And I think, yes, the wide open ones are great, But like a lot of on our written assessments, even on the IPA, we have bulleted points like try to do these things. Because yes, you've got this big broad scenario, but we know that can be daunting. So let's narrow it down to a few bullet points of how do I start? So whether the topic, let's say the topic is talking about your family, how do I start? Well, describe your family. Okay, and then how can we move on from there? Well, what is your family like to do? What do they like to eat? What if they went to a restaurant and they didn't serve what do you like to eat and you had to order something different? You know, just to try to get them in the habit of organizing and structuring their things, their paragraphs, their sentences, whatever they may be. Even at level one, just adding that extra structure is helpful up to even the AP levels where structure is really important. They've got to be able to write paragraphs and that and really have their idea flow from sentence to sentence. What do they call that? We have pre-speaking activities, pre-writing activities, but that'd be just an easy one. A pre-writing activity where you have a few questions written down and they have a couple of notes, for answers to those questions, and then they go write about it. And now they've got it kind of on their brain. I don't know.
Right. And pre-writing is something I've never really done a lot of those pre-activities beforehand. I just, you know, we practice speaking. I get them warmed up in the language always before I officially assess or something.
Which is a pre-activity, just not maybe specific.
But not specific to the modality.
Yeah.
Right. And so you read a lot in this IPA books. I've been reading through it again today. And, it really focuses even before the IPA. There should be type of pre-activities specific to the modality to get them in the language and get them going. And I think what's interesting too is you talk about organization. I totally agree. Our L1 greatly influences our L2, especially at the lower levels. Mm-hmm. We know that. So a lot of our students probably struggle with writing in general because organization is not a strong point for a lot of my kids. And I've noticed that if I focus on that a little bit more, I think if they organize and then they read through it, they would automatically find like, oh, I could say that better. Or once they can put their thoughts together, like, hey, this paragraph is about activities. This paragraph is about places I go with my family. Once they get that organized and see the flow of it, that will naturally improve their writing as they read back through it and they can add the details and mm-hmm. extend and go beyond just the basics that they gave. Is they're just trying to throw up the language originally, which most students, that's just what they're just trying to throw it out there. Well, if you take the time to show them how to organize it and then take an extra 10 minutes to redo some stuff or whatever, I think that'll naturally help them to go into the intermediate range and start creating and start building on what they already have.
Yeah, just another add-on to that is, and I don't know that I've done it much this year, if at all yet. There's still time, though, right?
Yep, we still got 3 months, so you can start in about two. Yeah,
is the wait till May, right? Last couple weeks of May.
That's right, May 31st.
The question words. So even level ones can do this. Just as they're writing, just tell them, okay, stop every so often, go back and read what you've written, and see if you've answered some of these question words. Okay, as you're writing, who are you writing about? Oh, what did they do? Why did they do that? Do they prefer to do that? When do they do that? With whom do they do that? Just those question words are great ways to add details, and I don't think a lot of students will think about that. Even throwing the question words actually into your writing. I like to eat spaghetti when I'm watching the Jazz. You know, they may not think about those question words as cohesive devices. And that's something I generally will try to do at some point in the year when they're writing. Go back and read it and make sure every sentence, okay, who is the subject here? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? When are they doing it? Where are they doing it? Just find ways to add those extra details. And really for level one to two, the struggle is to be creative where you can be intermediate. And by adding details, it helps. It's not the only way to get to the intermediate level, but it's going to help them. Have their own voice in what they're trying to say or write. What?
We were just talking about that today.
We were.
Right? At lunch.
Another aspect to writing, one thing that's mentioned here in this IPA booklet is that we have to be careful to make sure the students are not writing to the teacher. So that's one thing that can prohibit real student creation is that too often the students think, okay, what does the teacher want or what's the teacher asking here? And that gets easier the more authentic texts we use to have them to respond to or the more real world scenarios we give them. where they share opinions and they express things, especially if it's real, it's something that they actually are exposed to even at this age. It can be something that's political. It could be a social thing or relationships or whatever it is. If they don't think they're writing to the teacher, that will help them improve their language. Where often if you just put up on a prompt, tell me about this, tell me what you do with your family on the weekends. What do you like to do when you're alone? Those are, I'm not saying those are bad, but the students are automatically thinking, okay, what is this teacher wanting me to write? Right. Rather than really answer the question, really be able to describe. And so helping them understand who their target audience is. Like they really were going to write a letter to the governor to discuss the new DUI law and what they think about it, or, you know, some kind of real world thing that they actually have to experience.
Can you explain what that is for those outside of Utah?
They can look it up. They're smart people.
All right. I was going to jump in there with David Bong from Avant Assessment. When he was here, he was talking about how the for Rogers.
You mean Little Elway?
Yeah, Roger. We call him Little Elway around Little John. Little John Elway. His heritage class, Spanish for heritage speakers. He was saying the problem that they usually run into on the stamp test is they view it as a task completion. And that's where the, right. the students are too much in tune to, in all other classes, what does the teacher want? Yeah. What am I doing to, or what do I need to do to get what the teacher wants? And to me, that's task completion. Yeah. So did you answer the question? I answered the questions. I'm done. No. We want them to do more. We want them to, I'm doing an assignment where I have my students do an assignment where I want them to minimum write at least a couple of paragraphs, which is like for me 10 to 12 sentences. So they'll always ask me, how many sentences do I need? And my favorite answer to give is enough.
Right.
How many do I need? Enough. What does that mean? Enough to show me what you're doing. They just want to know what that point is that they can reach to be done.
Yeah. And that's a traditional education thing we've talked about a lot.
It's like they're trained that way.
Yeah. Whereas we switch to competency-based education, hopefully that's one of those things that we hope to change, is that students will get an assignment or something to do, and they will do it out of interest, or that they enjoy it, but hopefully do it to really show, hey, this is what I can do with this. I mean, you have to have instructions. There has to be guidelines for sure. And that's a hard one to beat. Students always ask how many sentences or how long or, you know, cause that's just what's been drilled into them. Sometimes I have to emphasize it, cause sometimes you get students that'll write a whole page in their notebook and they could have written a paragraph, cause it's like you say, it's very repetitive. Right. Says the same thing. I think Brandon mentioned that with the novice stuff. They use me gusta, like the whole time. And
like, I no longer care what you like. Tell me something else.
Change the language. Change the structure. Give me something different.
Tell me what you don't like.
So some students will write a half a page and they score higher than students that write a page and a half, right? It's a matter of how much are you saying in that one sentence? How much can I picture? How much can I understand about you or what you're writing about in that one sentence that's taking other students so long to do? And that's what's keeping students from really progressing, is realizing just complete the task. That's not what I meant to say.
That's what the students are thinking.
That's what the students are thinking, complete the task.
I was just saying, wouldn't it be nice if you gave them, okay, here's this writing prompt. It's a nice, authentic prompt. You're responding to who knows what. I can't think of one.
And it's hard. It's hard for a teacher to write it that way. It's really challenging.
So you give them this prompt. Okay, you've got 20 minutes to write to this. In my classrooms, usually what happens is they write exactly what it asked them to write, and they're done in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they might reread it, see if they need to change anything. But it'd be nice if they really took the full time and thought about what they're trying to write. And it's not so much finishing. It's using the 20 minutes or whatever time given to them to write it as well as they can and as detailed as they can. I don't know. And not that really happens that often. Usually it's just trying to write a bunch, not worrying how good it is, just trying to buy a bunch of I like this and I like that. Or it's just meeting the minimum requirement. And that's a trick. I don't know how it's a trick for, I think, every educator out there. How do we get our students to know and be okay with, okay, I'm going to take the time and do as best I can. It might look like crap, but it might score well because I'm trying to do something. I don't know where I kind of rambled there at the end.
And it's
Does
hard.
That make sense?
Because we as teachers, we want to create questions and prompts or whatever that are going to have areas that are more broad. So the student has to show ownership that they can explore whatever path they want to and defend their reasoning and whatever.
Right.
But while at the same time, we have to have some parts of the prompts that are going to be a little bit more narrow to have them work within a very specific space. It's really hard to make sure that's not too narrow. And it's really hard not to make sure it's not too broad, right?
Yeah. Right.
But also part of that is the skills. We've had teachers complain that sometimes our questions are too broad or they're too specific. Well, part of it is sometimes if you just ask the student, hey, what do you do on the weekends? There's also the skill of teaching the student answer that really well. Don't just say like, oh, I go swimming with my family. Don't just complete the task. Yeah. You do way more than that. It's like, oh, but everything else is just boring. I mean, I have to do chores. I have to get up at 6 though, cause I'm really tired. It's like, okay, say that, right? Say everything that you can. Mm-hmm. Don't just give the one liner.
That's even outside of teaching foreign language, like the ACT responses and things like that. You've got to prepare your kids to get to the point, be juicy and thorough in that point, right? Be really detailed and then clean it up at the end or wrap it up, like right. Rather than a lot of fluff. So there's definitely a balance between quality and quantity, but we don't get enough quantity, I would say, for the most part. What do you think?
We don't get enough quantity?
When you're asking them to write or speak, they don't fill the time. They don't use the time. Like we were practicing, this is speaking, not writing, but we were practicing today the jam activity, they call it just a minute, where you have to speak without stopping for 1 minute. Like that's the task, regardless of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So we did it once in English with a partner and then once in German with a partner. And even in English, they stall like at 30 seconds. And, so anyway, there's a issue of quantity sometimes that we want them to get in there and say more, even if it's not perfect. That's what we're saying, right?
You do have to have enough.
Yeah.
And some students will stop thinking I've completed the task, so they stop too early, whereas if they went the other 10 minutes out of the 20 minutes that you gave them, not only would you get more quantity, but hopefully you get more quality as they really start to think about what they're doing and why. And that's also, I think, where the pre-readings and the pre-writings and all those type of activities would come into help, is instead of just throwing them into a prompt or whatever it is, if you prep them for it and show them how to do it and guide them along, then in the moment when you are going to do the IPA part or whatever the assessment is, they'll understand the progression that they should be making when they're writing, hopefully.
Yeah, and just to add on with the prompts, finalize with prompts in the test, and whether you're writing prompts for just classwork, whatever it may be. This is coming from the ALA training with Daryl Nicolaisen. With writing specifically, and when it comes to rating or scoring writing, you've got to have stuff in there that measures their floor and stuff that measures their ceiling. So as you're writing prompts for your students, making them authentic in that, for level ones, the floor would be novice low to novice mid, right? Which is words, lists of words. So there's got to be somewhere in there where they're writing lists of words. And then the ceiling is going to be, really, we want to push them in our level ones. We want to push them to the intermediate. We want them to try so they can get to that novice high, right? They got to be there at least half of the time, which is adding descriptions and explanations. So as we design them for our IPAs and as we design them for our term and midterms, when we're writing these prompts, we try to make sure that those bulleted points and what you need to try to address cover both those floors and ceilings. Without the floor, we can't see, without seeing, being able to see what they do easily, without seeing where they struggle, we can't really, it's hard to give them a proper rating. So, and that's one thing I've tried to explain to my students when they're writing. Yes, there's going to be some stuff that's easy and you'll breeze right through it. There may be some prompts or some, bullet points where you have to sit and think. What am I going to say? How am I going to say it? How am I going to organize this? And that's normal. And you may not know exactly how to do it. You've still got to push yourself and try. Not that they always do, but the struggle is the journey, right?
So let's talk about the writing modality. We've talked about how it's generally the highest rated, or the students perform better in the writings and the readings than they do the other modalities of listening and speaking. Why is that? What is it about the writing modality that students are able to, you know, if your target is intermediate low, intermediate high range, why is it they can hit that easier in writing than they can in listening and speaking? What do you guys think?
It's visual and you have more time to think, really, and you can kind of back up and correct yourself pretty easily. And a lot of times with writing, you kind of mentioned this, but a lot of times maybe there's a reading that goes along with it or something. You can kind of pick a few pieces out and use that language in your writing. So, but anyway, I think most people are visual learners. You can see what you're writing. You remember it from writing it in notes, perhaps, or from another activity. And you just have a lot more time. Generally, you know, there's not that pressure. The anxiety is not quite as high. The affective filter. Not the effective filter.
The affective filter
is lower.
People say English like French or Spanish. Why do they do it? That's weird. Affect. It's literally the same word.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that for writing, to me, that seems the most. It's more comfortable than speaking because you've got time. You can see it. It's easier to remember.
Yeah. And there's not, I find with my students, they don't think there's as much risk.
Yeah.
And again, that goes to just me not teaching them, like, you need to take the same risk.
Yeah.
But it takes away that, I'll have to talk to somebody else. They're going to know how good or bad I am at Spanish. I have to understand what they say. There's a pressure thing, whereas writing, right, it's comfortable. It's this box that they can just go in, they're by themselves.
Turn it in, forget about it.
Right.
Forget about it.
There's not this negotiation. There's not a struggle like with the readings, perhaps, to figure out what some words means or some structures, things like that. It's a very kind of comfort zone thing, which will naturally increase their score. So one thing I don't like telling my students is that they have an assessment coming up or that day, because that automatically just freaks them out and stresses them out. They hate the word assessment. Stress levels go through the roof, and that really affects how they do. And I wish I could get to the point where I just give the test. I don't even tell them it's a test. It's just another activity. And I've tried that a little bit before, but with students missing and helping them understand that they have to get this in, stuff like that, I have to announce it to some degree. I wish they just come in, I just give them the reading, and then just after they do all their modalities for the IPA, just say, that was your assessment. That's it. And then hopefully see higher scores. So I would think the stress level and the comfort level is different. Yeah. Two, I think it's the risk factor. They don't think there's as much risk there. And to some degree, for some students, that actually keeps their writing scores from going too high because they don't take those risks. They just stay in that comfort zone of, oh, this is what I know how to say. I know this is right, so I'm going to stick to it. They don't give us that creative. They don't give us a higher score. So it's not that they're always scoring really high in writing. It's just generally higher than the other modalities.
It's a problem going third. You guys stole my thunder. Because I was going to mention the affective filter, and that is still there, but because it's not an immediate feedback as if it were an interpersonal conversation or even with the teacher, which is also probably by reading is so much easier, a higher score as well.
Postponed feedback. There's postponed knowing what happened because it's not in the moment.
They don't get. And the problem is the students are probably thinking, I suck at this.
Right.
I can't do this. And so that feedback, that negative feedback that they think they're going to get is pushed off until later. So maybe with that affective filter being lower, that's why, I would agree with the two of you in that, writing is usually better. But then as you were saying, Davin, as well, because they don't take the risks, because they don't see the risks there. But it doesn't allow them the opportunity to score higher.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow them that opportunity to do that if they're worried about risks.
That's another point about affective filters. There has to be some to produce stuff, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that part of the theory? Yeah.
Some, depending on the level of affective filter, some students, some people in general are able to produce better under certain kinds of pressure.
Yeah.
And for those that are listening, I'm assuming we all assume everyone knows that the affective filter is easiest way to describe it. For those that don't, is pressure.
Yeah.
It's just pressure to,
right.
to get done what you need to get done. That comes from, Dr. Krashen, Stephen Krashen, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about him at lunch today too, weren't we?
Yeah. Cause I saw him on a YouTube video today.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen his face before.
I don't know if you can completely eliminate an affective filter, but how do you, diminish or bring it down at least a little bit to make it so how they feel on their riding is comparable to like speaking and listening. How do you balance those books as teachers?
It's tricky. You don't want it to be gone completely, like we were just saying. There needs to be a little bit of stress and kind of heat. So I think quick feedback on short riding tasks is good for that. This is kind of a funny quick anecdote, but I was just talking to a kid who said he had anxiety about going up and talking in front of the class. And I was trying to tell him, I was trying to make a deal with him because he has like severe anxiety and like he'll sweat and start to stutter and things like that. And so I was trying to tell him, you know, can you just share a part of it or do you just want to do it with me? We were kind of talking about that. And then he went in to talk about how he at one point tried to take medicine for anxiety because his social anxiety was so severe. And he said he came to school after taking one pill. And he said, in his words, all basically like, I didn't care about the S words. Like, he's like, it was completely gone, like his stress. And he decided at that moment not to take it because he says, I literally cared about nothing. I didn't pull out any paper. I didn't pull out pencils. The teacher's like, hey, you got to get. He's like, you gotta get your stuff out. We gotta get going. He's like, I don't care about. So anyway, but like, that was just kind of I was laughing with him about that because he was laughing about it. And, but I think
just to be clear though, we don't feel as though, anxiety and mental issues are laughing matters.
Right.
But,
right. And this kid was laughing when he was telling me because he was just like, I didn't care about anything.
Sound like Stanley Hudson there from the audience.
I was going to try to do his voice, but I can't. So anyway, you're asking Davin how we get them to feel that pressure. I think that having little exercises along the way where they get immediate feedback and kind of feel like their writing means something and meets a need really quickly. And I think that kind of gets them in the mode. And just like you were saying, where they, you do a lot of IPA style activities so that when they go take the test, they're used to it and you've trained them on how to respond, I would say. I don't know. So once you got to train them how to do it, I think, and show a lot of good examples and say, I think I can't remember if we were talking about this on the podcast or just in person the other day. And I think Roger said it, but, quickly pointing out good examples. And saying this is a good example of writing and how we feel it. And I think the kids will start to recognize what we mean, what the difference is between completing a task and really, what did we call it? How do we describe it? Just really
expressing
and being colorful and.
Right.
Yeah. I like to, with writing, cause there are some students that write well, some that don't. And so I like to do activities where they have to pass papers around. So they'll write something and they'll pass it around and then the next student will have to respond to that. And That raises the filter up a little bit because they're worried about someone else seeing it. But to throw technology in there, if you've got access to, for example, Chromebooks, just create a Google document and share it with all of the students in that class and put them in groups of like two or three and have them work on, you know, whatever the question is that they're trying to answer a prompt. Have them write one or two sentences and try to write the best sentences possible. And then that way you could show it up on the screen and you can give that immediate feedback as opposed to having them turn in all the papers that you have to write on them and that feedback's not as immediate. Or there's the same activity without that particular technology where you've got the poster boards taped to the wall. I don't know that there's a name for this. You've got like six or seven poster boards taped to the wall and they're in their groups and they actually write it on the poster board with marker. And then you'll switch groups and they'll see how can you change this sentence? What can we modify? And you can kind of give some feedback that way. But the immediate feedback, I think, is going to help the students do a little bit better and try to help them take those risks where you can point, like, this was done really, really well. Look, grammatically, it's horrible. But look what they're trying to do. And that's what you've got to try to point out. I have something I've been struggling with. You guys want to help me out? I kind of talked to you about this, Brandon. It's hard to describe to students sometimes what creation is. Not creationism. I'm not teaching science where, anyway, that's a completely different subject. that buildings across the road.
Right. But the jump from
the
novice,
jump from
to,
novice
intermediate.
To intermediate, what does it mean to write created sentences? Because formulaic sentences could be organized in such a way that it comes across as created, but formulaic sentences in and of themselves generally are not created. I've been struggling with, and I see good examples and I have a hard time. I was like, oh, that's a great example on this assessment or on this writing. I need to take a copy of it or a picture and save it so I can show everybody. And then I forget. So I just struggle with trying to get students to understand what it means to be creative with the language. Or it doesn't mean that they have to be able to write, their version of The Lord of the Rings, some fantasy novel. That's not creative, coming up with a story. But that's what I think some of my students think. So I'm struggling with a way to be able to describe this to them, what it means. And this, tell me, we already talked about this, Welker, but tell me if there's other ways. My idea was to reference music to the students. I don't know how well that works, but let's say you play the guitar and you learn your chords and you learn a song and you can play that song really well. To me, that's formulaic because you're learning the formulas for that song. Right? You learn a scale, you learn that scale, and you can play the scale forwards and backwards. That's a formulaic sentence, more or less. In and of itself, it's not a created thing. But where you take that and you try, go from a regular band to a jazz band, for example, where you're taking your scales, you're taking your notes, you're taking those chords, and you're trying to come up with your own little tune. Your own, put it in your own words. And I remember when I was in high school, I played the trombone. My first year as a junior trying out for jazz band, I didn't make it because I couldn't, I could play the trombone really well. I could play my memorized phrases and my songs and that, but I couldn't create with the language. I couldn't take the chords. I couldn't take the scales. Not chords. You don't have chords on trombone. I couldn't take the scale and just.
Maybe that's why you didn't make it.
That could be it.
You're trying to play chords.
How do I play a chord on this thing? I don't know. I couldn't make that jump. I couldn't, and here I'm just thinking of like scat. Scooby-da-bop-bop-be-doo-boop. I couldn't do that. And that's what I'm trying to get, we're trying to get students to do to get to that intermediate level is, and it's not going to be good the first times you try it, but really, we're not rewarding your failures, we're rewarding you for trying to be creative. So by being, trying to be creative, you might not make jazz band, but you make intermediate low or novice high, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a hard concept to explain to your students.
That's what I'm struggling with. What do you do? How do you explain that, Devin?
One way I explain it is, and I think I shared this before, I had a student one year that when you write on his whiteboard, I'd ask a question, just a quick formative assessment, just answer this question and see how we're doing with these structures and stuff. And I had one kid for a while, he'd always just throw in a jab at me or something. And, I always told him, I was like, you know, your language is better when you make fun of me than when you just stick to completing the task. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, why is that? It's because it's you. It's your ownership. You've made the language your own. And if you're saying something that almost nobody else is really going to say, I would say that's more on the creative side, or at least okay. It's working towards creation. And I have a level one student and does really well at that, looking at some other boards, or I'll be reading through some prompts and everybody, you know, it's level one, so there's going to be a lot of formulas. A lot of people are saying basically the same thing. The only thing that changes is like instead of 9 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock, right? But mm-hmm. the sentence is the same for the most part. They might say, I like soccer. And then somebody else says, I like football, but it's still formula. It's still the same thing. He's saying stuff that it's like, nobody else has said this and nobody else is going to say it because this is this student. This is his personality. This is his life. And he's really trying really, really hard to express that. It's not perfect. There's errors.
Right.
There's still some repeated language in there, but you can see the effort that he's really trying to say what only he's going to say because he's the only person that's him. That's how I try to explain it. I'm not saying that's the best way.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes we try explaining these things to kids, and sometimes we come to students and we try to create these large, huge analogies. Right. Although Brandon's analogies always work really well.
So you don't like my music one, is that what you're saying?
It might be complicated for a student.
Unless they're a musician.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is a musician would be like, okay, that makes sense, right? Sports person's going to get the sports analogies. It's hard to create analogy for students that all of them are going to relate to, because that's a big umbrella that all the students have to fit under. That's why I'm saying Brandon should really write a book, because I could really use all his analogies that he has on the podcast, because he's got some really good simple ones. But oh, and I did too. But like your cookie one to me is easier for students to understand than like the trombone, right? And the recipe and stuff. So that's how I try to explain it. But again, that's one of those things that's really hard to take our language background and all the acronyms and all the things that we know. And how do you express that to students who don't have any of that type of background? Yeah. They're there to learn the language, but they don't know the pedagogy behind it, and they don't know these other things. The trick is to getting them to understand what's creative and what's formulaic. And that the best way I found so far for me, and I'd love to know if anybody has any comments or anything, please post on our website to help us out, is just to say, these are all good sentences, but you're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So, oh no, I said this sport. It's still the same structure. It's the same thing. It's the same boring, repetitive stuff. Whereas this student said something that none of you said and none of you are going to say because you're not that student. That's what I want.
Yeah. That's why I think examples are so important, like in your class.
Yeah.
Because it's.
So what you're telling me is when I see these examples in tests and assignments and that, when I tell myself, oh, I need to make a copy of this. Actually make a copy of it.
Yeah.
While you're talking to yourself, make sure yourself is also doing
like this what you're telling this yourself. Really
do you guys do that though? Oh, I'm going to remember to do that. And then you never remember to do that. I think maybe I'll tell myself from now on, I'm going to forget to do that. And then I'll probably remember.
I probably listen to myself as much as my students do. So it's probably not very good.
I think that's one of the fundamental problems with proficiency though, is it's not as objective as you got to have 500 words in this essay.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like, back in the 60s, they had that ruling on pornography in the First Amendment. Can we say this?
I guess I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
There was
a Supreme Court case in the 60s or 50s or I don't know, somewhere around there, 70s maybe. And they were trying to decide if the First Amendment protected this movie theater showing a movie that, you know, was considered obscene by some. I think one of the most famous lines from the, I don't know, court talk, the decision
from
or something.
From the case.
From the, like, the Supreme Court's decision was, some judge said something like, I'm not smart enough to define what obscene is, but I know it when I see it. That's kind of how proficiency is. It's like, it's really hard to objectively say, this is created and this is formulaic, you know, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point was he couldn't objectively define it, but he could. But you know it, like there's such a, you have to look at all these pieces of work that kids turn in kind of holistically and kind of just put it in your back of your mouth and chew it around a little bit, push it back from side to side and say, yeah, that's created. It's really hard to be objective about
what that means.
These analogies are getting a little weird.
And this is just a little activity. I've got a bunch of posters I had my students make around the room. Which is actually something Brandon did, I copied, where they took kind of ownership of the posters and what words they wanted on there for connector words and descriptive words. And one of my level one students took a word, and I honestly don't remember what the word was specifically, but part of something. They took that word and they were asking me, Mr. Nance, can I use this saying, like, part of me likes my sister, but another part of me hates my sister because... And that was just with that one student, and I was telling her, that's the perfect example of creation. You're taking that one word and you're trying to use it, and it's not correct the way you're wanting to use it, but that doesn't matter because you're getting your point across. And eventually, to keep using that, eventually I'll put a little correction on there with what word it should be. Cause the word she was using was like part of a whole, physically, not figuratively.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
There was an example I had when I did the activity where they had to respond to the other student's routine. I had a student write, there was a girl wrote something, I get up at this time in the morning to get ready to go to school. And the guy wrote something to the effect of, she gets up at that time why would you get up so early? Like, it takes me 10 minutes to get ready and go to school. And again, it wasn't perfect language.
Right.
But he got his point across it, and he was just, you know, I could tell it's kind of like Brandon's thing. Like, I can't define it, but I know when I see it. I got the emotion from him that he was just shocked.
Right.
Like, who in their right mind gets up that early in the morning to go to school? Cause I certainly don't.
How did you feel as a teacher when you read that?
Like, I got that emotion. Like, it was exciting. It was exciting. Like, hey.
Cause when I see those things in my head, a lot of times I have to run over to Roger or Brandon's room. It's like, look at this. This is the most awesome sentence.
Yeah. I high five myself.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't here to give the high five to. So I had to do somebody. But it was a moment, like I said, I think created helps you actually picture. You can see the student in your mind.
Yeah.
Their emotions and how they're thinking and stuff. It hits you more and you can't define it. I mean, we try to, and that's good. We should try to and explain it. But as a teacher, sometimes you just know. I was like, that's created. And if you don't know, you really break it down. Is that a formula?
Yeah.
Are they just sticking formulas together? Do I really understand? Are they really expressing themselves? Or is this just mechanical language?
The hard part is when they stick formulas together, that if you take it at face value, it's formulaic and not created. But if you look at it as a whole, the organization of those formulaic phrases, it's organized in such a way that it's
there's a level of control over it.
Which pushes it to that creative creativity.
Can. And that's
the word again, creative. I don't necessarily like that word creative.
You don't like a lot of words.
Because to me, and probably to students, they think creative and it's being an artist and writing this fancy piece of poetry or piece of theater or this novel or, and that's not necessarily what we mean. Maybe it's, we need to, owned. I don't know what we would, ownership, something ownership, to do with owned, owned and ownership. Like you need to, you take ownership of the language.
Individualized. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a difficult.
No, I agree.
We know it when we see it.
Now that you explain it, yeah, even creative to me, now that you say it that way, that makes sense. Like creative might not be the best word to use. Maybe we should find another word and
let's
throw it out there.
Give Actful a call and say, hey, what's the deal? Change your word.
Well, there's a lot of ideas there about the writing modality. We've talked about it definitely is a need to assess writing. It's a need to teach writing, especially as we mentioned earlier, not just how to put the words down on paper, but organize it and express your thoughts and clearly fulfill the task before you, not just complete it, but really express it in detail.
I like that word fulfill better than complete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What we're going to move forward to next week is we talk about speaking, which is the last part of this little series that we're doing. We're also going to discuss why we have to measure all modalities and not just writing. I think writing tends to be the more common or more popular, perhaps because students perform higher. It's easier for teachers, or perhaps more easy for most teachers, to assess writing than it is perhaps to assess a listening task or a reading task, especially in regards to how we do the IPA, because the IPA is very new. It's very different. It is a shift of a lot of things, so it can be challenging. Generally, writing prompts will take a little bit more time as you give students time to really think and things like that. But next week, as we talk about speaking, we close this out. We'll also talk generally over all the modalities and perhaps what modalities should have more focus than others and why that is, as we talk about which modalities highly influence the other modalities and which modalities don't really influence others, and et cetera.
Maybe we'll even give our own unscientific breakdown of percentages for each modality on what should be emphasized.
Sure.
Because we decided it's not 25, 25, 25, 25.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. We all might have varying opinions on what those percentages could be.
Okay. I'm going to be ready to lay mine out, what I think in my mind.
And you're the mathematician, so you'll have to make sure to help Roger get his math correct when he throws out his percentages. He might be way over. But just like he's grossly overpaying for Denver Bronco tickets. But
was that Yogi Berra said 90% of the game or 50% of the game is 90% mental, or what was it? 90% of the game is 50% mental.
Something wrong mathematically. Right?
Yeah. Yogi Berra.
Well, with that, we thank you for getting with us on this episode. We hope that you'll make some comments on the website. Give us some ideas of how you explain what created writing is to students.
And specific activities.
Give us specific activities. Yeah. How do you help students write and express themselves within specific contexts instead of just, here's a prompt, write about your family. That really helps the students grow in the language and move floor to ceiling. As hopefully we're all moving towards teaching toward proficiency.
And sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. sharing is also illegal to a degree, so don't care too much, if you know what I mean.
This kind of sharing that we're referencing right now is not illegal.
And with that, I will say adios.
Auf Wiedersehen.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.
Scooby-dee-bop-bop-bee-doo-boop.